Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce. It is Saturday, March 31st. Welcome to the end of March, 1:02 p.m. And members present are Representative Edgman Alternate, Representative Josephson, Vice Chair Wool, and myself, Chair Keto. Representatives Sullivan, Leonard, and Knopp are excused, and Representative Stutes may join us a little bit later. I will announce that when that happens. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Recording secretary today is Susie Edwardson, and our LIO moderator is Eileen Kim. And we have four bills on the agenda before us today. House Bill 262, Military Spouse Courtesy Licenses, is in its first hearing. House Bill 374, On Bill Financing of Energy Improvements, second hearing. House Bill 384, Regulatory Commission of Alaska Broadband Internet, second hearing. House Bill 401, Insurance Reinsurance Valuation Credit, second hearing. With that, we will bring House Bill 262 before committee. And if we can have Mr. William Judd Wallace, staff to Representative Kawasaki, come forward and place your name and affiliation on the record. Provide us with the introduction of House Bill 262.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is William Judd Wallace, staff for Representative Scott Kawasaki. House Bill 262, sponsored by Representative Kawasaki, would require the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to report on the progress of drafting and implementing regulations for temporary courtesy occupational licenses for eligible military spouses. In 2011, House Bill 28 was passed in order to help ease the transition for military families as they transferred to Alaska. This bill provided expedited temporary courtesy licenses to spouses of active duty service members who already had a pre-existing license in another state. After a study conducted by the University of Minnesota on behalf of the DOD, it started to come to light in fall 2017 that despite a series of nationwide legislations, military families were still having difficulties transitioning throughout a number of states, including Alaska, particularly in regards to obtaining occupational licenses. Additionally, this was enforced by the November 2017 updated preliminary findings of the Eielson Air Force Base Regional Growth Plan. As part of the study, a number of focus groups were conducted among military families in order to discover what challenges they may face when coming up to Alaska. One of the comments featured in these findings, which is in your packet, was anyone who has a license in a different state is required to get a new license or certification in Alaska. This is a challenge. The point of HB 28, which now is statute 08.01.063, was to reduce this same sort of challenge back in 2011, so the fact that one persists shows that there is still some area for improvement. After the University of Minnesota study, DOD published a document entitled Evaluation of Licensure Implementation Best Practices, which is enclosed in your packet as well, and featured two examples of legislation regarding occupational licensing for military spouses from Connecticut and Washington. The only real differences between these and HB 28 from 2011 is that Washington and Connecticut's version include and set requirements for a report that is to be presented to their variation of a Joint Armed Services Committee. HB 262, the one you are hearing today, is directly modeled off of these two legislations. Simply put, by requiring the department to issue a report on military spouse occupational licensure, HB 262 would help facilitate communication between the boards and the department and would help keep the legislator informed as to any continual challenges or room for improvement. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Judd Wallace? I do not. We do have invited testimony. And so if we can have Mr. Dale Vandy Hay, place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Dale Vandehey. I'm with the Department of Defense State Liaison Office. I'm a regional state liaison. The Department of Defense works with the state legislators to advocate on issues that impact and support military members and their family. We typically have 10 key issues at any one time. I would say this one is top of the list. Across the country, where military spouses are continuing to have need of assistance from the states to facilitate their license. This is not a giveaway. This is basically taking a license from another state and being able to transfer it either through licensure by endorsement, temporary licensure, or expedited licensure. And so this particular bill, which we support the policy in it, would provide feedback to the legislature on what the different licensing boards in Alaska are doing to improve policies and practices for transitioning military spouses. We thank Representative Kawasaki for sponsoring this issue and for your consideration of this initiative, and I'd be happy to answer any questions during this hearing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Vanderhaeghe? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. And next up we have Robert Dahl. Mr. Dahl, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, State of Alaska, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I was, on behalf of the military and the military spouses, I wanted to add that perspective in terms of what a military family faces. Every summer, we have thousands of spouses with the, come with their military members to Alaska. For those spouses who hold professional licenses, when they come here, they have to figure out what agency licenses them. In every state, they seem to be called something slightly different. They have to figure out what the different standards are and what they need to do to address that. They largely end up doing this on their own, either through word of mouth or through internet research. There's no official briefing provided by the Department of Defense. Department of Defense provides no transition documents to incoming spouses to alert them into who they need the license with. It falls upon the military spouse to do this, to find their way through this. We have DMVA have reached out through the active military and believe we can offer some informal avenues or augment them, such as bulletin boards at family support organizations or family support agencies on base. But it still becomes on the military spouse who wants to work to figure out how to do it without local references, and if a professional license is involved, how to navigate that. And by the way, on average, they're going to do that every 2 to 4 years, meaning 5 to 10 times through the service career of their military service member spouse. That's all I have about it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dole. Any questions for Mr. Dole? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. We also have Christy Rodriguez. Ms. Rodriguez, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Hello. Yes, thank you. My name is Christy Rodriguez, and I am a military spouse. And so I've been a military spouse for over 20 years, and I'm so grateful that I can have this opportunity to speak to you all today. This is an issue very near and dear to me. I have had to move, you know, every few years and pick up where I've started. The transition from Arizona, when I had become an MSW and was seeking my licensure for an LCSW, I had accrued almost all of my hours in supervision at the time that it was time to PCS to Alaska. At that point, coming up to Alaska and recreating the wheel, I began to work very hard towards my licensure, and it was very, very difficult to find out once I had submitted everything, because the board only meets every so often, that it was already time to PCS before I was able to complete everything. I actually got my approval to test once we were moving into our lodging. This is something I encounter spouses all the time. I have friends who are teachers, who are nurses, who are counselors. We make up a great population of very ready workforce. We are 38% underemployed in terms of education level compared to our civilian counterparts. This is something where if there can be any kind of light shed to this, where we can streamline processes to make it more transparent for spouses and also to help us in getting those licenses and certifications, that would make it so much easier for us to be able to give back not only to our family and our communities, but to the economic development for that location where we are at that time. So this is something that I just hope that we can work harder, and I definitely appreciate the work that Representative Kawasaki has done to shed light on this, and I appreciate your time and taking consideration to add more attention to this issue.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Rodriguez? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. We also have Sarah Chambers with the Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development available online for questions. I do have a question. Ms. Chambers, if you can place your name and affiliation on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. And I noticed that we do have a fiscal note. The fiscal note identifies $5,000 for the current year, but then it does not identify any additional costs in future years. Is this something that is able to be budgeted within the department? It does say an annual report.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Right now, we do provide updates as requested. There is one in the bill documents currently that was presented to the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, and we've been doing that on an ad hoc basis. If it becomes a statutorily required report, especially as it's listed now per calendar year, which is not how we currently document statistics, we document those by fiscal year, we're requesting $5,000 of expenditure authority that would be covered by licensing fees to update our database, and then from then on, the reporting would be just a function of our normal business practices.
Okay, Ms. Chambers, and just for clarification, that just means that that expenditure authority is carried forward and that in future years you'd be able to incorporate this into the budgets of the individual boards?
Mr. Chairman, we would only need that $5,000 in of authority in 2019, and then it would not be carried forward. It would be a one-time expense.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for the department?
I do.
Representative Bull has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, and I guess this is for Ms. Chambers. So the bill is asking for you guys to do a formal report every calendar year as opposed to fiscal year, and it's basically an annual report regarding courtesy licenses. I don't know if they just want numbers, and it's to order to help facilitate communication and aid in making occupational board staff and legislators more aware of what opportunities are available for helping military spouses get back into the workforce. Will this report actually do that? I mean, I understand the courtesy provision that allows a spouse to get a license more easily, and I don't know what that bill says because we don't have it in front of us, but I guess I have a couple questions. If they get a courtesy license or some sort of expedited process, is that for multiple renewals if someone lives here for 4, 6, 8, 10 years, or eventually they just become like everyone else who practices in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Bull, if I understand your question correctly, right now we have the existing processes that the legislature put into place several years ago regarding not just military spouses, but also members of the military, former members of the military. So we have a process right now for military spouses to be able to not only identify how to receive that expedited process. We have a robust page with quite a bit of information that we've had in place for about 3 years. For professional licenses for military, it's available through a link on every one of our division's web pages. And we have over 100 license types. Almost all of our programs offer a licensure by endorsement or credential, which Mr. Vandehey from the DOD mentioned. So almost all of our programs offer that process that he mentioned with the best practice. The ones that don't mention that or don't have that are ones that where it isn't really relevant or it's a safety issue, such as needing to have geographical awareness and experience in Alaska, big game commercial services guides, marine pilots, for example. They need to have hands-on experience in the terrain in order to get a license, and those really aren't the types of licenses that we see spouses requesting. We only had 35 military spouse applications last year, So right now there doesn't seem to be a big demand, and we do have those resources in place on our website, and our staff is trained to provide assistance. So this bill would require us to provide what we're already doing, would just make it mandated on a certain date. We're happy to do that. We're also very interested in hearing from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, military spouses, other constituent groups that might be able to help us see how we can meet needs that we're maybe aren't being met currently, because we are certainly not hearing about them, and we feel that we're meeting all of the best practice standards that the DOD has published. Again, this is in a report that's in the bill documents, and we're happy to do these things, but need to be able to hear from those who are affected and understand that there is a problem in order to be able to attack it, so to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. Follow-up from Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your answer, Ms. Chambers. The other thing that I noted in an earlier testifier was that the Department of Defense doesn't, at this point, it sounded like, do any sort of outreach or they don't have a program for incoming military families or spouses to say, hey, if you're in Alaska, you can get a license in an expedited way, and it would seem like that would be more helpful as far as getting more, say, than 35 people that used your expedited licensing program. So do you understand the need to go for calendar year instead of fiscal year? Was that explained to you? And lastly...
One question at a time, please.
Okay, that question.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wall, I heard the testimony of the amendment sponsor when the CS was adopted in Military and Veterans Affairs. I'm sure there's a reason that is beneficial to others. We're happy to provide it at whatever date the legislature requires. It's an extra step for us because that's not how we produce that information. But if it's important to the Joint Armed Services Committee or others to receive it mid-session, then that's fine. We're happy to do that.
Follow up.
Last question. Thank you, Mr. Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So calendar year would be end of the year, December, January, around there. I know that's when a lot of your other licenses come up for renewal, and I know from personal experience that your office does get a little backlogged around that time, to no fault of your own, of course. But is that timing going to coincide with that, or are you sort of indifferent to that?
To the chair, Representative Wool, the CS requires the report to be provided to the Joint Armed Services Committee on or before the first day of March of each year. So my understanding is that would give us the time to be able to have all of our renewals that would have ended on December 31st, all of our new applications that were submitted December 31st, plenty of time for us to analyze that information and synthesize it into a report that would be suitable for distribution.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Chambers? Thank you for being available on a Saturday, Ms. Chambers. At this time, I will open up public testimony. It's for 1:21 p.m., and I do not have anybody signed up for public testimony, so we will leave public testimony open and set aside House Bill 262. And thank you, Mr. Judd Wallace. We will move on to House Bill 374 on bill financing of energy improvements, and we do have Mr. Earle. Staff to Representative Wool, if you can come forward. And we have been working on a committee substitute, and so let's go ahead and bring the committee substitute before us, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was getting ready to present it. I move that the committee adopt the CS for HB 374 version 30-LS1333/E as the working document.
Okay, and I'll object for discussion purposes. And Ms. Ellis will come forward just to talk briefly about the changes.
Thank you. My name is Caitlin Ellis, staff to Representative Keto and to the Labor and Commerce Committee. We have added some changes to the bill that clarify some things, reorganize some things per drafting requests, and I'll walk through those. So first, there's a few rearranging. There is a document explanation of changes in your packet that does a great job of walking through these changes. So there's some cosmetic changes where things are reorganized per the request of Legislative Legal. There was a cross-reference that was deleted, 42.05.261, which was a mistake originally and doesn't pertain to the bill at hand. There was a substantive change on page 3, lines 25 through 28, that deletes most of the section about rental properties. So this change allows landlords that are responsible for the entire utility bill, they can enter into the agreement on for a rental property. The tenants themselves cannot enter into that that agreement. And there are some changes that coincide with that. On page 2, lines 8 through 9, language was inserted, making it explicitly clear that the utility, whatever utility company, can choose the types of improvements that they will finance under an on-bill program, which was the intent of the bill all along. This just clarifies that it, the utility company does get to have a say in that. Also deleted an electric or gas distribution before utility in 9 places throughout the bill. So instead of just pertaining to electric or gas distribution utilities, this is opening up to all utilities. And the final change was rewording definition of energy conservation system. So in the old version, version N, the switch that would be financed under this bill had to be more efficient and not increase direct greenhouse gas emissions. That definition has been reworked in this new version, so the new fuel system that will be financed must not increase greenhouse gas emissions and must either be more efficient or cheaper, so it just opens up to more flexibility. So those are the main changes throughout the CS.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions on the changes to the CS? Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may have been answered, but just a little clarification from Ms. Ellis. First, there was a caller who expressed interest in weatherization being included. Was that at least considered, or where does that stand?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, with this new definition, it does weatherization products. I guess they would not qualify, as they're not directly influencing the heat. Although if they could make a case about that it is making everything much more efficient, there's an opportunity there. I'll have Mr. Earle speak to that further.
Okay. Mr. Earle, place your name for the record.
For the record, Rob Earle, staff, Representative Wohl. I think Ms. Ellis is correct that it it's a the sponsor might want to speak to this, but the intent, I believe the intent was not to include weatherization, but the way it reads, it's maybe a bit ambiguous.
And I guess I would add the one change that we did make to the bill that I think actually helps a bit is making sure that the utility has the ability to review and approve the product that would be financed, which means that the utility would be providing some due diligence on whether or not that product would actually provide a benefit. And so I think if there is a weatherization product that the utility believes would actually decrease their utility utilization, I would imagine that they could provide that as a product that they would propose for on-bill financing. But Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Technically speaking, a product that improves energy efficiency could include weatherization. The original intent was to facilitate the conversion from different fuel sources, whether it be from oil to natural gas or from, you know, electric to district heat. a conversion that usually involves a appliance or device, a thing that you would spend many thousands of dollars and would want to finance. Weatherization is a little different, involves a lot of application of insulation and you know, a lot of work on the house that wasn't really the goal of the bill, although if utility found themselves in a position where they want to do that, they certainly could. But the full intent of the bill is more for, like, appliance-type things, like a boiler.
Follow-up, Representative Josephson.
Yes, the AELP expressed, I think, general support but concern with the definition of fuel switching. My question is, can you help me recall what their concern was and whether that's been solved in the CS?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this definition mostly resolves that complaint. We've continually worked with AELP, so this change on page 4, line 31, their concern was if it wasn't necessarily more efficient but did was cheaper or did increase greenhouse gas emissions on an indirect way, it was hard to balance whether or not something shipping up here it was included in the greenhouse gas emissions. So this definition was in working with AELP.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? With that, I'll remove my objection to committee substitute version / E. Are there any other objections to utilizing that as our working document? Seeing none, / E is now our working document. And did you have anything else you wanted to add, Rob, in support of the bill?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. And we do have, looks like we have Duff Mitchell here for public testimony. Mr. Mitchell, if you want to come forward. And public testimony is still open.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, everybody that's working here today on a holiday weekend. I'm Duff Mitchell. I'm a resident of Juneau. I'm the managing director of Juneau Hydropower and Juneau District Heating, but I also am the chairman of the Juneau Commission on Sustainability, which is an advisory commission to the city and borough of Juneau. And I mention that because we just passed and had unanimous support from our assembly for the Juneau Renewable Energy Strategy, which calls for 80% renewable energy by 2045. And where that's differentiated from where you see in other states or communities where they say 100% renewables, we took the realistic position that you could obtain 80% not only for generation, but for transportation and heating. And I mention heating because heating is a component of this House Bill 374. And I would like to say that, you know, Juneau has a seawater heat pump system out at the Ted Stevens Research Center. Seward has the Sea Life Center. Seward has a seawater heat pump system. Those are 300% efficient. The greenhouse gas impact from those systems is zero. So that's my business is Juneau District Heating, and we're implementing that system here in Juneau. I support version E that you've just entered the bill as proposed. It value adds the intent and purpose of the legislation, but also expands the impactful benefits to Alaskans through higher energy efficiencies, which reduce the cost to Alaskan ratepayers. You know, the new language is utility agnostic. It's cleaner, inclusive, and provides the opportunity for larger benefits, and therefore I think is smart. It also provides, the bill itself provides a mechanism to pay for energy efficiencies through energy savings. And that's very important because if you go to somebody and you say, hey, you know, this is going to cost you $5,000, but you're going to save $20,000 over the life of the heating system or $50,000 over the heating system, you have them sold. But not everybody has $5,000 cash laying around, and this bill provides that opportunity for a lot of Alaskans to be able to implement smart ways to reduce their operating costs for their budget through this process. So with that, I also want to add that the state has a 50% goal of renewable energy in in generation. We have a state energy policy, and I believe this bill supports that as well. So I see this as supportive of my community and where my community is trying to go, and I also see this as very supportive of the state in a much larger, broader impact. I also like the bill that it's not subsidizing, it's market based, and so you're gonna, if you're a homeowner or you're a renter or a landlord, you're gonna be making things based on economic decisions as well as what's cleaner, safer, and smarter for your systems. So in that, I just ask for passage. I encourage other people to sponsor this bill too, other representatives. I think this is a good bill. And is worthy of wholehearted support from this body and from the other body, which this will go to. I think this is really good legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Do we have any questions from committee? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. We don't have anyone else signed up for public testimony, so I will close public testimony at 1:33 p.m. We do have Gene Terrio available from the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority. Four questions. Do we have any questions for Mr. Terrio? Seeing no questions, that brings the bill back before committee. Is there any committee discussion on House Bill 374? Seeing none, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HB 374 version 30-LS1333/E be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you, Representative Wool, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the bill paperwork. Thank you. We're back on the record in House Labor and Commerce at 1:35 p.m. It is House, let's see, we'll bring House Bill 384 back before committee, Regulatory Commission of Alaska Broadband Internet. We have the bill sponsor, Representative Guttenberg. If you can come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record, and provide us with your statement, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, David Guttenberg, representing House District 4. If I may, there was some questions yesterday. Basically, it just explain briefly again what the bill does. It just add internet broadband access to the things that the RCA does. And there was a little spreadsheet in your packet that went through in a short way examples of what they could do or would do. And I have some more information if you want me to give you some examples of what other states have done along this route. But they all are expanding capabilities and deployment of internet throughout their rural parts of all of their state. Basically, what they're doing through grants, through understanding what the needs are. Some of it with through legislation. Some of it just gives the creates broadband development office, which I have. There is another bill that does that, but that is mine. But I think the part of the problem in my pursuing this is we already have a place that is a natural place for this to sit. So it's a list of places. I can start reading off what they do, but that's basically they create more opportunities for more services to reach out where they aren't being done now.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Representative Guttenberg? Seeing no questions, we still have public testimony open. We don't have anybody signed up for public testimony at this time, so I'll close public testimony at 1:37 p.m. That brings the bill back before us. Do we have any committee discussion on House Bill 384? Seeing no committee discussion, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HB 384 version 30-LS1211/A. Be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
We have any objections? The motion is stated. Seeing no objection, we will take a brief at ease to sign the committee report. Thank you. On the record in House Labor and Commerce at 1:40 p.m., last bill up before us in committee today is House Bill 401, Insurance Reinsurance Valuation Credits on the Internet. We do have a committee substitute for the bill and have done some work on Section 1 of the bill. I will actually, maybe I'll have Ms. Ellis come forward and provide a description. But, Representative Wool, let's go ahead and bring the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the committee adopt the CS for HB 401, version 30-GH2702/D as the working document.
Okay. Any objections? I will object for discussion. Ms. Ellis, if you can talk about what we have done with the committee substitute.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is Caitlin Ellis, staff to Representative Quito. I'll give a 10,000-foot approach to what the bill does.
It's
very
it well.
Technical, yeah. And Lori Wingheyer, who is here, can speak more thoroughly to the bill. Essentially, the bill has two main components. And version A of the bill, the first section, has been reworked, which in version D is now sections 1 through 5. So that Ledge Legal has gone through and reworked conforming to our drafting standards. Sections 6 through 19 deal with PBRs.
Principle-based reserving.
Exactly, not the beer. And that section has not yet been touched, but still good legislation will need some drafting rework, but the CS version D mostly just makes drafting conforms drafting standards, and there were a few words that were left out, so some in the original bill that we have added to that. So that's the essence of the CS, but Lori Wingheyer can speak more thoroughly to that.
Thank you, and I will also provide a comment, and in the interest of trying to make sure that the bill has the opportunity to move through the system and understanding that there were drafting concerns with a portion of the bill, we began work on the easiest portion, which was the first section of the bill, in order to make sure it conformed with our drafting requirements. We are continuing to work on sections 6 through 19. The overall goal is not to be changing the bill, but to make sure that what has been drafted is consistent with our legislative drafting manual. And where we end up with questions of substance, we have been discussing those and will continue to discuss those individually. And in the interest of time, I would like to actually try and keep this bill moving forward at the same time we're trying to utilize the legal resources we have to conform the bill as it goes through the process. Representative Josephson.
What, Mr. Chair, what are its other referrals? I mean, you say you want to keep it going forward, but yet it needs work in its latter sections.
We will be continuing to work on the drafting. It will be going through the process. I don't actually.
Just go to rules.
Goes to rules from here and then over to the Senate.
All right. So follow-up?
To the other body. Follow-up.
Your intent is not to advance the bill today. Is that
Our intent is to advance the bill, but as the bill sponsor, continue to work on the conforming components of the other sections of the bill.
Okay. And bring those to the floor or have the Rules Committee work them over? Or?
We will be working on them through the process. If we can get the bill over to the Senate, then making sure that legal has the opportunity to conform, then we would introduce a CS on the in the other body. With that, we'll bring Ms. Wingheyer forward. And actually, I would remove my objection. Are there any other objections to adopting the backslash D version of the bill? Seeing none, backslash D is our working document. Thank you, Ms. Heyer. If you can place your name and affiliation on the record.
Good afternoon. I am Lori Wingheyer. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance for the State of Alaska. And thank you for having me this afternoon to talk about HB 401. I think perhaps I could provide a little bit of clarification on what happened here. When this bill in its entirety is based on NAIC model law. When it was originally drafted, we thought it might be cleaner, and our read of the drafting manual, which apparently we were not correct, was that we could repeal and reenact so that it followed the NAIC model exactly. The Ledge Legal did not like that approach. We have done a cross-reference. All parts of the model law are in the CS. We have noted them in the cross-reference, but the overall intent of the legislation has not changed at all. There has nothing been added to it or taken from it of what was presented to you as version A. The valuation, we did not repeal and react. That was just changes to the wording to put the PBR, principle-based reserving, in. We are not expecting there to be the changes in the second section of the bill, so to speak, as there were in the first because of when we did the repeal and reenact.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Winghire? Seeing none, thank you. And we do have public testimony still open. I do not have anyone signed up for public testimony unless there's somebody in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 401. Representative Wohl does have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wouldn't let go an opportunity to ask Ms. Winghire some questions. But so you said the repeal and reenact motion, Ledge Legal didn't like that. But I thought you just said that the limits that you were changing in Section 2 were in went along with repeal and
I can actually explain that a little bit, Representative. So basically in that first section that we were working on, there were a lot of existing components of statute. And what the department's legal team did was, we're changing a lot of the statute. Let's go ahead and just take the whole thing out and just rewrite it. Mm-hmm. Our drafting manual doesn't like the whole repeal, replace, unless you're making very significant changes to a section. So what they did is they incorporated those individual changes into that existing statute. Was what Ms. Winghire said regarding the principle-based reserving is that the principle-based reserving does not impact an existing statute. It's actually adding a provision of statute, which means the repeal replace discussion won't be taking place. It's just a matter of making sure that the language is conforming with what our drafting standards require. So it will be a lot easier to go through that second part. The reason we split it out in trying to move the bill forward is we were told by Legislative Legal that they were strapped for time and being able to get through the whole bill, so we told them to work on Section 1 first and that we keep working with them as the bill moved through the process, just because we're getting close to perhaps the end of session. So, Representative Josephson.
Mr. Chair, perhaps we want to make a little bit of record about the urgency of it. Would you like to do that?
Or we did have something on the record, but if you could restate the issues associated with adoption of the model law in regard to both components of the bill.
Yes, thank you. Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, the first part of the bill, the credit for reinsurance, is part of our accreditation standard and is effective for all states, or should be effective for all states, who have or are seeking accreditation in January of 2019. The second part of the bill, the principle-based reserving, is a 2020 effective date. So we certainly, if we had to pick, we'd look at Section 1. We'd like to get both done so we don't have to come back again with another bill next year. But that is the urgency in getting the credit for reinsurance done, is that it has to, for NAIC standards, for our accreditation, is a January 1st, 2019 date.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Winghire? Seeing none, and I had mentioned that public testimony is still open. I don't have anybody else signed up for public testimony, so at 1:48 p.m. we will close public testimony. That brings the bill back before committee. Do we have any committee comments on House Bill 401? Seeing none, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move HB 401 version 30-GH2702/D be passed from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection to the motion as stated? Seeing none, House Bill 401 has passed from House Labor and Commerce. We will be adjourning, but I encourage everyone to stick around to sign our committee report. Next meeting will be Monday, April 2nd, at 3:15 p.m. We have Senate Bill 155, Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies. It's in its second hearing. Senate Bill 108, Medical Care Licensing Medical Board. That's first hearing. HB 136, Motor Vehicle Dealer Franchises, in its first hearing. And we may be able to bring House Bill 230 back before committee, telecommunications, internet privacy. So with that, we will stand adjourned at 1:49 p.m. Thank you.